This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Thank you.
Neil, how weird was it to work with Sean and not be directed by him? So was that kind of strange?
It was fun.
Was it? Could you get back at it?
Because he wasn't in charge. No, it was a little bit awkward at first just because, you know, it's like being asked to play, you know, a basketball game with your coach. It's, you're kind of like, how's this going to pan out? You know, it's like if Tom Cruise and Tom Skerritt ended up flying together at the end of Top Gun, what would that have been like?
Did you feel that awkward? Sean felt awkward too, or do you feel you just felt awkward?
I think we were both like, what's this going to be like? You know, I mean, I'm surprised that they gave me the part in the film. You know, I mean, I'm surprised, you know, Sean allowed it. He must have been so sick of me after the end of the film. I mean, plus he had to edit the thing, too. I was able to just shoot the movie. I mean, he had to stay in that editing room and splice my face over over.
You're like a different person in this. I cannot... So different.
That's oh, thank you.
Well, Gus, it is another total transformation, even the physicality. I mean, what do you do to alter your body so much from old world?
It was more of just hanging around Cleve and just letting some sort of, you know, osmosis go on. Just getting to know him, being around him, and just kind of trying to understand his perspective on the world. And he's had such an interesting life that it was very the research itself was compelling, so I had a good time getting to know him and understand, you know, how he came to San Francisco, how he got involved with Harvey Milk, how he got involved with kind of being a more of like a militant activist, what it was like for him in Europe when he saw the riots, the gay, the uprising.
How daunting was it to play someone who was hanging around, though?
Mm-hmm. It, you know, it definitely added, like, a little bit of, like, kind of, like, anxiety, you could say. But at the same time, it was such a helpful... He was so helpful. You know, it's kind of like seeing... It's kind of like having... seeing the perfect blueprints to an amazing house and, like, being able to look at them. And having all the answers to a quiz, like, right in front of you. And your anxiety goes, well, I hope I'm not going to fuck this, you know, house up that I have the perfect blueprint for. I don't know. I felt spoiled as an actor on that film. I think that, you know, Cleve was also incredibly cool. He wasn't, you know, some raving lunatic. You know, this was a very cool, very savvy, smart guy who everybody liked, who was just one of the staples of the film production, who everybody loves. And, you know, he's just got a wonderful charisma, and he's, you know, just a people person, and he's a good communicator.
So did you still feel the same kind of amount of freedom, though, that you would, you know, knowing that he was kind of standing over your shoulder, kind of...
You know, he would say things that would kind of encourage me, you know, and Gus was very encouraging and to just do what I was feeling, and so I think that Cleve, even though he was always there, he was cool enough to where he didn't put any weird pressure on me. You know, although sometimes I do, like, little things to annoy him. I could do, like, a little thing, and he, like, I knew that he would notice it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'd kind of, like...
Did he ever take you aside and say,
I would do, and then I wouldn't change. I'd just be like, ha, ha, ha.
I asked James Franco about this, too, that in this movie there's so many, it's not just one way of presenting gay characters, which you so often see in movies. Everybody had different personalities. And we were talking about how it was based on real people because they all had different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But was that like a challenge to play a gay character, play a character that had maybe so-called gay characteristics, not go over the line with that, kind of
balance it? Oh, well, I played Cleve as a straight person.
Yeah. Okay.
Not. No.
You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is that...
No. I mean, I think that is interesting. You see the different types of people, of gay people in the film. I think that's cool.
But I mean, your character was... He was really funny. And
I mean, that's Cleve, you know?
Yeah.
And he let it be known to me early on. He was like... Because it was one of those things where I was like... if I start to act really flamboyant, is Cleve going to be like, what are you doing? Like, is everyone going to be like, why are you acting like that? I was kind of self-conscious about that. And then Cleve was like, you know, I'm a queen. Like, you can play, like, that's who I am. I'm a queen.
Was there, like, a gay boot camp
and I was
to
like,
show you the mannerisms?
No. 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 Are you a graduate?
I just high-five you for that right now. Nice. He's a founder and a member.
Out of the closet, my friend.
But it's quite true that Cleve was pretty much, he felt he was pretty much in control of his life at the beginning, and that he did almost walk away when Milk first made the offer to him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by all accounts, Cleve was perfectly content to just kind of party and live with this kind of gang of street kind of lost boys in San Francisco. They kind of had this wild kind of existence, and that sounded really kind of wild. I mean, he showed me, you know, he had like a gang of friends, and they all like lived together, and they all like had jobs together, and they were kind of almost like a tribe. And then he finally got involved with Milk, and he started to become, you know, started to educate himself more, and he kind of, Harvey channeled him into having a purpose. And I think one of the things that really was a big influence on him is he went to Germany. Or not, yeah, he went to Germany, but he went to Spain,
right.
And he saw some riots in Spain.
It was a big transition there, right?
Yeah, and I think that he wrote a piece about it, and then he sent it.
You could tell the character shifted when he came back.
Yeah, yeah.
That scene was
very,
the most powerful, I think. Kind of, yeah. One of the most powerful in the movie when he's talking about those riots.
Yeah, he's very focused, and it's kind of someone who's, you know, has be trying to find a purpose.
But I think his street background also kind of helped him too, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Like, yeah.
You know, he
getting
was
getting down in the trenches with everything.
Really good, you know, community organizing kind of skills. And I think that there's a review that is I can't mention it. It's too early.
What?
It's one of those things, you know, where it's like you can't really go on record saying something, and then you're like, I should just bite the bullet and not say it.
A review of the film?
No.
Oh, okay.
He's not
going to
say that.
You're trying to get it out.
What did you know about this before when they gave you the script? Did you
literally
know
nothing? I thought the Castro. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the whale in Pinocchio. I did. Wasn't that Maestro? I was reading the script and I was like, Castro, whale, Pinocchio. That it was. I didn't know that much about it, so it was a bit of an education process for me. And I read the book, The Mayor of Castro Street, and that's a really helpful book if you want to know about that time period and that Harvey's life. Well, I'm done.
What made you want to do this project? Like, after you read the script, what made you say, this is something I really want to do?
I mean, as soon as I knew that it was going to be with Gus and Sean, I mean, I was in. And then what really made me passionate about it, though, was watching the documentary. Because I read the script, and I really liked the script, and I kind of understood it, but when you see that documentary and you see who Milk is and that environment of San Francisco and what was really going on, it seemed more tangible to me and was really moved.
I'm going to ask you an off-subject question. One of my favorite films of this year is Speed Racer.
Dude.
I think the movie is amazing on so many levels. It's ridiculous. So what the fuck happened? Why did that not connect with people the way it should have?
I'm just curious
your opinion.
It's one of those things where maybe, you know, they didn't cut the perfect trailer and they kind of got screwed on the trailer. I mean, I really liked the movie too. I was upset when I saw the movie get, you know, treated the way that it did when it came out and stuff.
It was so much like the cartoon that I grew up.
It was such
it was
a bummer because I'm really protective of the Wachowski brothers because they are so talented, so to see a really cool movie that is really creative and different on a big scale get shafted is by so many of those critics was kind of a bummer.
But I think it was like the cartoon so much is maybe why it didn't connect as much, because it's bizarre.
I mean,
in a good way.
I think the reason why, you know, is just that the first trailer. It's all about that first trailer.
It looks so perfect, man. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you look at the trailer or you even see part of that movie, it looks so disgustingly perfect.
But that,
because of what the look the Wachowski brothers gave it, that you're going to either like the look or you're not going to like the look.
I think some people thought they were going to like saw tracers and stuff when they were walking out of the theater, though. I mean, I heard people that were having like...
I just remember I saw that movie. Me and my friends went and saw Speed Racer on IMAX.
Yes, that's where I saw.
It was just like so cool.
It was so amazing.
I know. Try driving at night right after you watch that movie, and it is a trip.
Yeah. Especially if you're on. In the process that you guys knew something was going wrong, because I mean it was set to be just this big summer movie. It had the whole Warner Brothers PR machine behind it. Was there a point that you guys knew something had turned?
No. Literally, the film was testing like in the 90s.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just opening day. Was
it was testing in the 90s.
Yes.
They were like,
yes,
this is going to be the most massive of all time.
I mean, do you think it's popular? I think it's just a little, like, it's... I think it's five years ahead of its time.
Dude, it's a classic. It's like Baron Munchausen.
Yeah,
anybody like that?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think that this is one of these films that down the road in 10 years, whatever it is, people are going to be like, wow, we didn't get this. You know, or I saw that in the theater, but you really didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just... It's as a fan of the film, it's just very frustrating, and I'm, you know, just...
It's a bummer, but in a weird way, you know, it's... I'm excited by people I meet who've seen the film, because most of the people who see it, who I know, are big fans of it, and they end up really digging it. So it's cool that it's able to, you know, have... to go on and still be seen.
Have you watched it on Blu-ray?
That's where you gotta watch it.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So what are you doing next? What's the next thing on the plate?
I did a little part in this Ang Lee movie called Taking Woodstock, which comes out in, I guess, summer. It's a small part. I play a Vietnam vet who interacts with the lead in the movie, who's played by Dimitri Martin. Really good guy. Smart guy. Really funny. I recommend YouTubing his stand-up if you're bored. It's so much fun.
Ang Lee's another interesting director.
So interesting. So I'm so into him. And
another underrated film, Hulk.
I like Hulk.
I like Hulk too.
We'll be the two.
I know.
The thing about Ang Lee that's quite interesting is the way he's able to tackle many different genres. What was it
you
like?
You don't get
Hulk
anymore.
What was it like?
I love it.
What was it like?
Well, come on, Sergeant.
He was going to respond to her next.
I'm just curious what it was like working with him, and what did he, what was he like compared to, say, the Wachowskis or Gus or...
Well, there, you know, each great director that I've been able to work with is very uniquely different. You know, Sean has this kind of poetic fury and passion, and Gus has this kind of relaxed kind of grace, and Aang has this kind of, you know, very like elegant kind of attention to detail and kind of very keen sense of nuance and creativity. You know, they're all so much fun working with all these different personalities.
And Catherine Hardwicke, because I thought that was another underrated.
Yeah, I agree. I know.
Dogtown.
Yeah,
Dogtown was a lot of fun, and I loved working with Catherine. We had this really great kind of contentious relationship, where we would kind of play with each other and kind of toy with each other and like make fun of each other and yell at each other. But it was like all a lot of fun in a fun way. And we just had a great time.
I'll let you just sneak downstairs. I think she's doing Twilight. So.
I know. I saw her yesterday.
Yeah.
There's a lot of movies gearing up for production in February and March. The system seems to be about to launch into a crap load of films. Are there any that are on your, like, you scoping them out, thinking something might, you know...
Yeah, I've read in the past like couple weeks, I've read like five or so scripts. I'm like trying to read a bunch right now, and you know, it's interesting. There's a period piece, there's a western, there's a thriller, there's a small indie, you know, kind of drama. It's you know, just trying to figure out what would be the the right fit, or, you know, not just with you in the part, but with you and the director, or you and the whoever.
Does it factor in whether or not the indie versus the Hollywood big wheeled machine as a decision for you, or is it all about the character you're going to be playing?
It's all about the character, but it's also about the director. In a big way, it's about the director. And I get excited, you know, for some directors, or a lot of them are amazing, but I get excited working with people that I know made films that I already like.
And when you're reading a script, do you know, like, a few pages in, yeah, this is good?
Sometimes you have a feeling, yeah, you kind of have that, oh, this is a good feeling, or you kind of have that dread, but I always like to finish the script, you know, because if anything, sometimes you'll realize maybe this isn't the one for me, but you can always just finish it as a story and as a movie, as a fan of film, you know, you want to see what happens in the story.
Now, after your experience in Speed Racer, will you consider doing something that big again, you know, another... you know, superhero like, you know, character,
yeah,
or anything? Or,
yeah, sure. I mean,
are you reading any of those right now, any scripts for those?
No, not right now. But I mean, I would be hesitant to do maybe an iconic superhero like Speed Racer for a little while, just because, you know, Speed's pretty cool.
Back to the movie though, how was the premiere at the Castro?
It was intense, yeah. And there were some protesters for, yeah, No on 8, and I imagine there'll probably be a lot more protesters. Yeah. This week at LA premiere.
You filmed, I'm going to ask, you filmed in Berlin for a long time. If you had one day to go back there, what would be the thing you'd do?
It's funny because, like, I told this story like a million times on all these friggin' talk shows I went on about how when I was in the hotel, we went in the spa, and there was like all these like naked German men in the spa. So I thought you were gonna bring that up.
Oh,
like,
no.
You were in Berlin this summer. Tell me about the spa with those.
No, I didn't.
Okay,
I just stories.
That's one of those, like, how I get, I ask that so much.
I wasn't gonna ask that. I was
curious. Like, so the spa.
He was gonna ask that.
Yeah.
apparently, the thing he changed was he would go back and not do it.
Do you guys? Do you guys ever get into the bad habit of, like, when you guys are gonna do like a piece on someone, you just like download their stats from their IMDb, and then that's like half the shit you bring up. So literally, like, there's like a couple really obscure quotes about me that, like, literally are bullshit. And every time I sit down with someone, they ask me, like, there's this thing, like, I went karaokeing one time at this place in Hollywood with, like, and Lindsay Lohan was there that night, and so was, I can't remember, like, this girl, Bo Garrett. So literally, almost 90% of the interviews I do, this is how I know there's a lot of people who get kind of lazy. They go, so, you go karaokeing with Lindsay Lohan. And I'm like, what's up, IMD, bitch? It's so funny, though, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm like, wow, this person just, like...
I was being serious about Berlin, though, because it's an amazing city.
It is, and it is a mecca of our arts for all over Europe, and, you know, there's a lot of different galleries and things that I had a good time going to.
Where's a better place to find out about you than IMDb?
IMDb is not a good place to find out about anything.
I don't know.
I think you need to update your IMDb with other quotes that you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And or just, when people don't mean serious. And then
just make up stuff. Yeah.
I'm like writing my own articles then.
There are other actors that do that.
Thanks,
not just
Speed Racer.